It's the middle of June, and here in Great Britain, we're enjoying a heatwave at the moment. Temperatures are scorching. Everyone's at the beach, there's sunbathing, and what better time could there be to talk about Christmas? Run the theme music!
What's this? What's this?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What's this? What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this? What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you!
What's this? What's this?
Well, it just came a trusty old Red Ryder Carbine Action 2 on the Shot Range Model Air Rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Podcast with your host, Jack.
He's an angry elf.
Hello, you beautiful people. How are you? It's so good to be here. It's so good to see you. Should we just do the interactive bit? Yeah? Okay, here it comes. How are you? I've just asked you. Did I ask you that? I've forgotten what happened. I'm doing it again. Okay, here it comes. How are you? Yeah? Right, that's it. I don't want to do any more of that. To be honest, are you enjoying the interactive bit? I don't know. It's only short, so even if it annoys you, you think, oh, it'll be over soon. Right, do you remember in the last episode, it was just before I was going away on holiday, and I had to record it 2 days after the previous episode. Normally, I've got like a couple of weeks, you know, a bit of research, a bit of sitting around, watching TV. I didn't have any time for that, so it may have seemed that the last episode might have been a little bit shabby around the edges. I don't know. This episode, I've got no excuses. I've got no excuses why it's going to be shabby. So I want to do my very, very best to make this a fantastic Christmas experience for you in the middle of June. So should we get into it? The correct answer is yes. Let's start with this. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. Question number one. Do you want to do the quiz? Well, tough, we're doing it anyway. Right, so you know the drill. I ask you 10 questions, you give me 10 answers, I read out the 10 answers. If they match, you get a point. If they don't match, you don't get a point. That's how quizzes work. At the end of it, you add up how many points you scored, and then you sit in a corner crying because you don't know as much as you thought you did, do ya? Or maybe you do, maybe you know everything. I don't know. Right, so let's start with the first question. Here it comes. Question number one. Complete the title of the 2014 film starring Dean Cain, A Bell for what? Fill in the blank on that question. Because it was Dean Cain, eh? He was Superman, and now pretty much all he does is Christmas movies. I've watched a couple of them. They're all right. I don't remember this one, but I'm going to take a stab at what I think the title is there. Question number two. What gets stirred up on Stir Up Sunday? What gets stirred up on Stir Up Sunday? Question number three. In 1939, as part of a Christmas promotional campaign, the Montgomery Ward Company's copywriter, Robert L. May, created which character for a song and an eponymous illustrated poem? Okay, got that one? Question number four. Which Chris Rea song title was the title of the Not Going Out Christmas episode in 2019 when Lee and Lucy go on a disastrous Christmas Eve shopping trip to buy a giant inflatable Santa? Now, I'm sure to most of my overseas listeners, that question that made no sense to you. But the reason I've added it is because all you need to know is a Christmas song by Chris Rea. I reckon you can do that. Question number five. At the time of Jesus' birth, who was the ruler of Judea who ordered the massacre of the innocents? Who was that? He was not a very nice man, I can tell you that for nothing. Question whatever. Who plays the title role in the film Bad Santa? Whom? Whom is a bad Santa? Question something. Comedian and actor Jack Whitehall's dad, Michael Whitehall. Comedian and actor Jack Whitehall's dad, Michael, makes his family stand for the whole of the Queen's Christmas Day speech. Is that true or is that false? Well, I can tell you something. He doesn't do that anymore. Maybe for the King's speech, not the Queen's speech. Okay. If you don't know who Jack Whitehall is, very famous comedian in the UK, been in a few films and stuff. He was in Clifford the Big Red Dog, the live action film that came out about a year or so ago. So you might know him, you might not, but does his dad make him stand up for the Queen's speech? You tell me. That's your job, not my job. My job's asking the questions. Next one. Complete the title of Daniel O'Donnell's 1994 Christmas album, Christmas with blank. Christmas with what? Now, you may not have heard of Daniel O'Donnell if you're overseas, or to be honest, actually, even if you're in the UK, you might not have heard of him if you're quite young. I've heard of him. I don't think I could name one of his songs, though. He's an Irish singer, sings a lot of very light, gentle songs, I suppose is a good way to say it. He's very popular, but the reason I've added this question for people that haven't heard of him, I reckon you can take a stab at the answer on that one, but maybe you can't, but it's there. What are you going to do about it? Okay, question number something. This is one of those questions that's only based about Christmas because it was at Christmas. It happened at Christmas. This is not a Christmas song. Who had the 1967 Christmas number one single with the song Hello Goodbye? Whom? And the final one, that means it's number 10, in what Eastern European language is I'm going to give it my best shot here. Veselich Svyat, the Christmas greeting. In which Eastern European language is Veselich Svyat, the Christmas greeting? Okay, how was that? Good. Right, well, here come your answers. Question number one was the one about this Dean Cain film from 2014. A bell for what? Right, you ready? Christmas. A bell for Christmas. It's a Christmas quiz. It's quite a straightforward one. I guessed that. I got it right. Question number two. What gets stirred up on Stir Up Sunday? Well, that, of course, is a Christmas pudding. Yeah, I don't know if many people actually observe Stir Up Sunday. I've got a feeling my mum does. A lot of people will just buy their Christmas puddings from Tesco's or whatever. But my mum always makes her one, our one, because I'm normally there for Christmas dinner. Now, Stir Up Sunday is actually the last Sunday before Advent. So you're looking at about a month before Christmas is when you stir up your pudding and then you leave it to sit and marinate or do whatever it's doing or go mouldy, I don't know, before you cook it. Yeah. Anyway, in 1939, as part of a Christmas promotional campaign, this is a long question, isn't it? Do I have to read out? I'm doing it. The Montgomery Ward Company's copywriter, Robert L. May, created which character for a song and an eponymous illustrated poem? That was, of course, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Question something or other. Which Chris Rea song was the title of the Not Going Out Christmas episode in 2019 when Lee and Lucy go on a disastrous Christmas Eve shopping trip to buy a giant inflatable Santa? The answer is Driving Home for Christmas, of course, which I have talked about on this show. I don't think it's massive in the States, but I think it's popular in Canada to a degree, and I think also Australia, but I could be wrong. Anyway, next one. At the time of Jesus's birth, who was the ruler of Judea who ordered the massacre of the innocents? That was King Herod, who was a bit of an asshole. I'm sure he won't mind me saying. Question number six. Who plays the title role in the film Bad Santa? Well, that would be William Bob Thornton. You might call him Billy Bob Thornton. I always call him William because I like to show him respect for his fantastic acting in that film. Question summing. Comedian and actor Jack Whitehall's dad, Michael Whitehall, does he make him stand up for the whole of the Queen's Christmas Day speech? Does he? He does. They got to stay stood up for the whole speech. Yeah. I thought it was false. I won't lie to you. But I was wrong. Complete the title of Daniel O'Donnell's 1994 Christmas album, Christmas With... And the answer is, Christmas With a Bad Case of Hemorrhoids. Oh, no, it's not. Sorry, no, it's Christmas With Daniel. Do you know what I thought it was? I just thought it was Daniel O'Donnell. Christmas With Daniel O'Donnell. But it's not, it's Christmas With Daniel. So I'm not even going to give myself half a point for that. So there you go, yeah. I think it got to mid-20s in the UK chart that Christmas when it came out. Number nine now, because that flew, didn't it? Who had the 1967 Christmas number one single with the song Hello Goodbye? You say goodbye and I say hello. That was the Beatles, of course. And the last question, in what Eastern European language is, for goodness sake, Veselich Svyat, I know I'm saying it wrong. It's got like those little, what they called, Agrex or umlauts or whatever, dots around, there's dots around the letters as well, and the L's got a little line through it as well, so I've no idea what I'm going to be saying. Right, do you know what, I'm going to blooming, I'll get it up on Google, I'll play it, this is what I'm going to be saying.
Wesołych Świąt.
In what language is that the Christmas greeting? That would be Polish. There we go. So that was your 10 questions. How did you do? Did you? Oh, no, I got 7. I told you which ones I got wrong, didn't I? That one about Jack Whitehall, Daniel O'Donnell's one, and I did not know what country that came from. But the rest of them I did all right with. So, yeah. So there we go. That was the quiz. I hope you enjoyed it. I had a blinding time myself. So now let's move on and we're going to do this.
Do you hear what I hear?
Do you hear what I hear?
Yes, boys and girls, it's Do You Hear What I Hear? And this episode, Bob is going to be talking about a certain type of transport. Take it away, Bob.
I like to remind those at the Tiki Bar that life is just not like a fairy tale. If they lose a shoe at midnight, they're not Cinderella. They are just drunk. So we all know how the Coca-Cola company helped to imprint the image of Santa onto the world. Obviously, Coca-Cola didn't create the legend. There had been many different depictions of the sainted gift-giver around the world, including the tall, skinny Father Christmas and a scary-looking elf. However, in 1931, Coca-Cola commissioned the illustrator Haddon Sunbloom to paint Santa for its Christmas advertisements, and he did so picturing him in a velvety red suit, white fur trim, a thick snowy beard, and a smiling jolly face. Voila! This memorable appearance played a huge role in defining the modern look of Santa Claus. But did you know that the company started another holiday tradition? Beginning in the 1990s, these big red Coca-Cola trucks began appearing with Santa pictured on them. They first were featured in an ad with the tagline, "Holidays are coming," and millions of people began to associate them with Christmas. Soon after, Coca-Cola created a real tour of these vehicles across the US and Europe. They were decorated by the Industrial Light and Magic Company. This was the same company that did the special effects for all the Star Wars films. These Coca-Cola tours were popular, but nowhere more so than in Great Britain. They would travel to 20 to 40 different stops, and it was called the Coca-Cola Christmas Lorry Tour. Wait, the what? My Do You Hear What I Hear alarm was triggered. Lorry? Who's Lorry? For you see, in the U.S., Lorry is a proper name, and most often feminine, like Lori Metcalf, Lori Anderson, or Lori Partridge. What we would call a truck in the U.S. is called a lorry in the U.K. It comes from the verb lurry from the 17th century, which meant to carry or drag along. This term was first applied to those long, flat wagons without sides that were pulled by trains. But when the vehicles became self-propelled and moved to the roads, the word came to mean the same type of trailers, but now they were being pulled by an engine. Now, while all lorries are trucks, not all trucks are lorries. A British lorry is only the large vehicle that carries freight. Since Americans use the generic truck to describe pickups, vans, and all other sizes of vehicles, how do we differentiate a large truck from a smaller one here in the States? Well, we might say tractor trailer, or rig, or 18-wheeler, or it could even be a semi, or a semi-trailer, or semi-tractor, or even semi-tractor trailer. Well, come to think of it, maybe lorry is the perfect name for a big hauling gal. Cheers and happy Christmas.
Yeah, do you know, a couple of things there, actually. First up, the Coca-Cola truck, or lorry, as we call it. Yeah, that was a big thing. I don't know if this, when they stopped doing it, or if they are still doing it, but I remember it came fairly close to us, and my wife's sister, she was going to see it, and it was like a big thing, and it's like, oh, did you want to come as well? And I think I must have been working or something, for some reason I couldn't go to see a truck. I don't know if they were dishing out loads of free cans of Coke or what was going on, but yeah, it was a big thing. Everyone was talking about it. Yeah, and also, interesting, I suppose I did know that they didn't use the term lorry overseas, but yeah, that's what we call a big one, a lorry, and a truck for us as well. I drive a truck for my gardening. It's like a flatbed. That's what we'd call a truck. Yeah, interesting one. I'll tell you another interesting thing about the word lorry. I always remember the toughest tongue twister from when I was a kid was you had to say red lorry, yellow lorry. I can do it reasonably well now, but back then I always remember it's the hardest thing to say in the world. Red lorry, yellow lorry, red, there you go. Let's have another go. I can do this. You practice it. Practice along with me. Here we go. 1, 2, 3. Red lorry, yellow lorry, red lorry, yellow lorry. Forget it. There we go. Yeah, so there we go. That's Bob's first segment. He'll be back again later in the show. Right now, it's time for this. Stories about St. Nicholas. I tell you what, this is the life, boys and girls. It's another segment where I have to do literally nothing. I just sit back, put my feet up, and let someone else do all the hard work. This is another story of the real life of the real St. Nicholas, and it's read expertly by my dear friend Scott Newman. Just before I play this, I want to say, Scott, I know I said it was going to be in the last episode, but the last episode seemed to run on a bit longer than I was expecting, hence why I'm doing it in this episode. Don't hate me. Or do hate me. Do something. Here's the story.
The people of Mira were suffering under the burden of heavy taxes. They begged Bishop Nicholas to ask the emperor to relieve them of the high taxes which caused such hardship. Nicholas went to Constantine to plead the case of his people. The emperor heard Nicholas's pleas and granted a large reduction. Nicholas was given a written copy of the order. He immediately took the copy and went down to the sea, where he threw the parchment out into the water. Soon afterwards, it was fished out of the water near Mira and taken to the proper authorities. The order was put into immediate effect, and taxes were lowered substantially. Meanwhile, the finance ministers convinced Constantine that losing this revenue would seriously harm the royal treasury. Constantine summoned Nicholas back and asked to have the order returned so it could be changed to a much smaller tax cut. When Nicholas reported that the order had already been put into effect in Mira, Constantine sent a runner to determine the truth. How could it be true when Bishop Nicholas was still in Constantinople? However, when Nicholas's words were confirmed, the emperor allowed the full reduction to stand. A century later, Mira's people still attributed their low rate of taxation to St. Nicholas.
That's funny, that is, because that's the same way I post all my letters. Yeah, so I write out a letter to someone, put it in an envelope, and then just chuck it in a river. Or if it's an important one, or maybe it's going overseas, I'll chuck that in the sea. And they always seem to get there. Yeah, so of course that's why it would work for St. Nicholas. You should try it, kids, actually. You know, like if you've got to pay your rent or whatever, stuff all the cash in an envelope, seal it up nice and tight, chuck it in the river, and it will make its way there. As long as you've got the address correct, as long as you, and the postcode or zip code, as long as you've got that on there, it'll make it there, guaranteed. Guaranteed. Yeah. You know, it's funny, I really do enjoy these stories about St. Nicholas, but I'm not sure if I believe them. But it does add to the myth of St. Nicholas, so, you know, I like that. Yeah, thanks to Scott for reading that out and sending it through. Fantastic work. If you're not listening to Scott's podcast, why aren't you listening to Scott's podcast? He's got two Christmas ones. He's got the Christmas Morning podcast. That comes out once a week. But, right, this is something else. Yeah? Every 25th of the month, they have like a special episode because it's like, you know, a countdown in months to the big day. So yeah, there's a bit extra for you. So definitely check out Christmas Morning. And also, you've got to listen to Tinsel Tunes. The latest episode just dropped. I had a listen to it a few days ago. And it's about Santa Baby. It's him and Dwayne Bailey. They always do a fantastic job about whatever they're covering. And I know you'll enjoy it. So if you haven't listened to that latest episode yet, go and listen to it. Subscribe. Do something. Thanks again, Scott. You've done a fantastic job. And now it's time for this. Boys and girls and boys, it's joke time for me and for you. So yeah, this is coming from my Christmas joke loo roll, and it's another joke. Here it comes. What do you call people who are afraid of Santa Claus? Claustrophobic. Yeah. Claustrophobic. It's funny. Thank God that's over. Let's move on. Look at this, boys and girls. Three segments in a row where I don't have to do anything. And I'm not doing anything. Well, I am. I'm scratching myself in certain places. But other than that, I'm not doing anything. It's fantastic. So, yeah, without further ado, I'd like to hand you over to Bob. And can I say, Bob, you look fantastic.
Why, thanks, Jack. We are reaching out again to friend of the show, Benji Pearson. He's our Scandinavian-American correspondent who has another way to celebrate Christmas every day beyond his colorful attire. Now, this is a unique concept that I hadn't considered, but I find intriguing and I want to check it out. Benji uses Rudolph Day, which is the 25th of each month, except June 25th, which is, of course, Leon Day. But Benji on this day will make a Christmas post on his social media. Now, I am not so good with the platforms. I am more of a lurker than a contributor. But Benji, he uses his Instagram story at BenjiPier55 to promote holiday themes. It might be hashtag architecture of Christmas or hashtag designs of Christmas. He said that he likes to offer a little information on each topic. So he's trendy and informative. If you have a Christmas tidbit you want to share with the world, we can help. You tell Jack, Jack tells me, and I'll, well, pass it on to everyone else.
See, that's a good one, but it doesn't really work for me because I only post through my podcast. I don't have like a personal Facebook or Instagram or anything. I just got the podcast Facebook and all my posts are about Christmas. So it don't really work for me, but could work for you. So why not spread a bit of Christmas cheer every 25th of the month? Thanks to Benji for sending that through. And of course, thanks to Bob for reading it out. Now, Bob's new podcast is out, The Festive Foreign Film Fans. If you haven't listened to the first episode, it's out. It came out just after my last episode a couple of weeks ago, and it's blinding. And can I tell you something? Bob had more downloads in his first day than I had in my first month. In fact, it was in my first possibly 3 months. Can you believe that? I can, because I am familiar with how bad my podcast is. But he's doing really well, and I think you should give it a listen. It's called, like I said, Festive Foreign Film Fans, and each episode they take a foreign language film and talk about it. Yeah, and it's nice because, you know, it's different films that you might not have been aware of. Yeah, next episode, the second one, will be coming out a couple of days after this drops, so go and give it a listen. I'll put links in the show notes. Thanks again, Bob. Now it's time for this
jingle, jingle, jingle for segment.
In last episode's Christmas Every Day segment, Bob talked about Christmas drinks, which was a suggestion from our listener, Ty Virgin. And I thought, do you know what? I'm going to do a segment on it. Now, here's the thing. I am sure there are hundreds of different Christmas drinks all around the globe that people drink at Christmas. I'm going to cover ones that I am aware of, which means a few of these might only be popular in the UK. So you get to learn a little bit today, boys and girls, about what we drink in the UK. I'm not going to go into massive detail on each one, but I'm going to talk a little bit about it. And if there are any interesting facts, I will share them with you. They're in no particular order. I was going to do like a top 10, but I'm not. So, like I said, they're in no particular order. So I hope you enjoy this. And I wanted to start off by talking about a cocktail called Buck's Fizz. Now, if you mention Buck's Fizz in the UK, a lot of people would be familiar with a band that won the Eurovision Song Contest in, I think it was 1980, around about 1980. And they had a song, Making Your Mind Up.
You gotta speed it up, and then you gotta slow it down. Cause if you believe that a love can hit the top, you gotta play around.
Now, they were named after this cocktail. And this cocktail is pretty much a mimosa. And if you know what a mimosa is, you'll be aware that that is orange juice and champagne or sparkling wine. Or these days, a lot of people are having it made with Prosecco because Prosecco seems to be all the rage. And it is named after the Bucks Club in London. And one of the barmen there came up with this drink. Yeah, his name was Malachy McGarry. So it was invented in 1919, like I said, by Malachy McGarry. And in 1925, the mimosa was invented in Paris. Well, not really invented, is it? 6 years later, he copied someone else's drink. A few of the sources I read suggest that a Buck's Fizz is like 1/3 orange juice, 2/3 champagne, and a mimosa is 50-50. But I don't know how true that is, because I think a lot of people, when they're making a Buck's Fizz, will just do it however they fancy. Interesting thing about Malachy McGarry is that he features in some of the Jeeves and Wooster's books by P.G. Woodhouse. And if you're not familiar with the Jeeves and Wooster's books, it was a series of books that ran sort of around the 1920s. And they made them into a series on TV in the UK in, I think, sort of mid-90s, starring Stephen Fry and Hugh Laurie out of House. Yeah, they were perfectly cast as well. It was a really popular series, that was. Anyway, this barman is actually in some of those stories. And the club that Bertie Wooster goes to is called the Drones Club, which was based on the Bucks Club. So, yeah, Bucks Fizz. It's very popular at weddings, but on Christmas morning is something that people allowed to drink. And I think the idea is it's got orange juice in it, so it'll sort of like wake you up and it'll pick you up at the same time with the champagne. And it is popular in the UK. You can actually buy bottles of Buck's Fizz in the shops, so it's like in a champagne bottle and it's already mixed. I don't know how popular this is overseas, but it is a drink that is drunk in the UK on Christmas morning. I can't remember the last time I had one, but I remember my mum often doing up a Buck's Fizz on Christmas morning. My mum's not much of a drinker. I think it was more of a traditional thing. Yeah. So that's the first one. That was Buck's Fizz. Second one is a snowball. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with a snowball. It's another cocktail. So a snowball is made of advocaat, lime juice or lime cordial and lemonade. And it's called a snowball because it's got like a white colour to it once it's been mixed. And it's advocaat or advocatenborrel, which is the Dutch name for it, is a Dutch liqueur. It's made from egg, sugar and brandy, and it's very thick. It's got like a custardy sort of consistency to it. The most popular one in the UK is Warnink's advocaat, and I remember having a bottle in our cupboard when I was a kid, and because it's so thick, it sort of dries out and goes a bit crusty around the top of the bottle. Yeah, never got drunk that much. Do you know what? I don't think I've ever tasted it, actually, and I don't think I've ever had a snowball either. But a snowball is a popular cocktail at Christmas. I don't know if you've had one. If you haven't, why not try one right now? So moving on from snowball, you've got eggnog, which is actually slightly similar because the advocaat is sort of like eggnog with brandy in it. So eggnog, or sometimes called milk punch, and it was originally from the UK. Now it contains milk or cream, sugar, egg yolks and whiskey or spiced rum usually, and it can be served hot or cold. Now you might be thinking, yeah, we know about eggnog. A lot of people don't, because in the UK, very tricky to get hold of. You can buy it in like litre cartons on Amazon. I'm not sure how nice that is, you know, coming out of a carton. But other than that, I've never seen it anywhere. I don't think I've ever been in a pub or around anyone's house where they're serving eggnog. Yeah. The name is derived from the words egg. Now, egg means egg. And nog, which either means strong beer or a type of mug that was used to hold strong beer. And like I said, it started off in the UK, but then it made its way overseas. Now, originally in the UK, they would add sherry or brandy, and it was more of a drink for the rich people. But over in the States, it was quite tricky in the colonial days to get hold of sherry or brandy. But one thing you could get hold of was rum. So in the States, in colonial days, it was normally spiked with rum. But now it seems like it's more likely to be mixed with a bourbon or a whiskey. Now, although it's got eggs and milk or cream in it, you can actually buy vegan versions. Goodness knows what they taste like. And I wonder if they can really call it eggnog. I wonder if they've got to have a different name for it, because obviously it's got no eggs in it. Having said that, eggnog's got no nogs in it. So, yeah. Now, a couple of little stories about eggnog. In 1981, there were some residents and staff of a nursing home where they had a batch of eggnog. Now, the problem with eggnog is, right, the eggs are raw. Now, what you can do, okay, is if you let it to sit, because it's got alcohol in it, the alcohol will kill any bacteria in there. For example, salmonella, right? But you need to leave it to sit for like weeks. It's not just like a couple of hours. Oh, it'll be fine. It will not be fine. You've got to leave it for quite a long time. Anyway, in 1981, in this nursing home, they served up this batch of eggnog. 120 people became ill and 4 of them died. Yeah, just from a dodgy batch of eggnog. 120. How big was that vat of eggnog? Like, what did they bring it in some huge tanker truck? And we're just like, I don't know, 120 people got ill. That's insane, isn't it? Yeah, 4 died. Another great story about eggnog that you may or may not have heard of was the eggnog riot of 1826. So there was this military academy in West Point, New York, and they had some quite strict rules about alcohol. Now, there was 260 cadets at the school, and they had these rules where you're not allowed alcohol because they were drinking a bit, some of them were, and becoming a bit unruly. So they were told that for their Christmas eggnog, there wasn't going to be any alcohol in it at all. Now, a lot of the cadets were annoyed about this, so they smuggled some rum into the barracks and put it in their eggnog. And they had this like private party in their rooms, all got slaughtered, and then had a bit of a mini riot. Yeah. And if you go on Wikipedia, there's like a timeline of the events of the whole saga. And at the end, it tells you like what happened to all the people that got charged with the rioting. So there you go. Don't drink too much eggnog. Could start a riot. Now, I don't know if I've told you this story before, but years ago, I was desperate to make my own eggnog. I was like, I see it all the time, you know, Clark's there drinking it by the cupful on Christmas vacation, and I wanted to try my own eggnog. So, one evening, I made my own eggnog, and I sat there, put all the ingredients in, stirring it in the pan, stirring it away, stirring it, stirring it. The whole thing curdled, didn't it? It just turned into this like lumpy slop. It's like brilliant. So I had to chuck it all away and I just had rum and Dr. Pepper instead. Yeah. I never had another go at it either. I'm sure I could have. I'm sure I should have. To be honest, I should have just tried to do it cold. And then that way, A, I wouldn't have had to worry about it curdling. And B, I could have got salmonella. So double bubble, innit? Yeah. And that was eggnog. The next one I want to talk about is a Tom and Jerry. This is a type of cocktail, and here's a question. Is it just another name for eggnog, or is it a slightly different drink? I don't know. I do not know. I've done a load of research, and some sort of say there's slight differences, but I couldn't really see what the differences were, because there's so many different types of eggnog. You know, people add different ingredients, different spices, and different liqueurs, and then you've got a Tom and Jerry, which, again, there's sort of different versions of that. So maybe a Tom and Jerry is just another name for an eggnog. Maybe it isn't. So the next drink I want to talk about is called a hot toddy. This is usually whiskey, but you can have it with other spirits. And you add water, honey, and lemon. And this is often served up as a cold remedy. Now, there's a couple of places where the name may come from. The first is toddy is an Indian drink made from fermented sap. And they'd warm it up and drink that. I don't know. The other possibility is from Robert Bentley Todd, and he recommended a prescription for feeling ill, like a cold, and it contained brandy, white cinnamon, sugar, syrup, and water, and you'd warm it up. So, yeah, that's a hot toddy. I don't think I've ever had a hot toddy before. I am familiar with people sitting there having a hot toddy if like they've come in from the cold or they're feeling a bit under the weather, they might want a hot toddy. Although I'd consider it a Christmas drink, it's more of a winter drink, that one, I'd say. Next one I want to talk about is hot chocolate. I'm giving it a mention, that's all. I'm just going to mention it because, to be honest, yeah, you can drink hot chocolate any time of the year. I mean, not so much in the summer, you might, it's unlikely. But really, I don't consider it a Christmas drink, I just consider it a year-round drink. Of course, if you add marshmallows, that makes it more of a Christmas drink, but you can add marshmallows any time of year, can't you? I know my daughters, they're not massive fans of hot chocolate. I don't know why, you'd think they would be, they're not. But come Christmas Eve, they still want a cup of hot chocolate. They won't drink it, they'll like sit there, fish out the marshmallows. Yeah, hot chocolate. Another hot one, hot buttered rum. If you want to make hot buttered rum, you use rum, obviously. You use butter, obviously. You use water or cider, apparently. Yeah, you can have it with cider and spices. To be honest, if you're going to have it with cider, I'd sort of, and it's because it's got the spices in, I think that's a bit more like a mulled cider, to be honest, because quite often you can buy mulled cider, you can add a shot of rum to it when you're like in a pub or whatever, that would be an option. So yeah, I'd say really hot buttered rum would be served with water. But in a few of the sources I checked, it did say you can have it with cider, so I don't want to argue too much about it. Now, hot buttered rum originated in the 18th century in New England because rum was the most accessible alcohol, and in winter people wanted to like add a bit to it, make a bit more of a cocktail, so they'd add butter. You melt the butter in, and the idea is that the butter has to sort of become a part of the consistency. It doesn't just float around on top like oil and water, you'd think, you know. Yeah, and it's considered like quite a nice tiki drink. So Bob Baker with his tiki bar, I'm sure he's tried hot buttered rum. If you haven't, Bob, why not? Sort yourself out. And I can tell you someone else who's tried it, and that was me. Yeah, about, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago. I've always liked rum. I think we've discussed that before. I've always liked rum. So I made myself some hot buttered rum. Now, I swear, I must have been watching a film, because this wasn't a drink I was particularly familiar with. So I must have been watching a film at Christmas, and they mentioned hot buttered rum, and I thought, I've got to make myself some of that. I love rum, I love Christmas, I want hot buttered rum. So I spent ages melting up this butter, warming up the rum, chucking in the water, mixing it all in, pouring it into a glass, drinking it. Didn't like it. Didn't like it at all. No, it was a bit too strong for me, to be honest, because it's, you know, the only thing watering it down is the, well, the water. You know, I like a mixer often. I mean, I occasionally will just have a neat rum to sip, but yeah, this was a bit, and it was all greasy around my lips. To be honest, I think I made a hash job of it. I think it was a bit like the old eggnog situation, but not quite as bad as the eggnog situation, because at least I did drink this one. Yeah. So there you go, that's hot buttered rum, very popular with a lot of people at Christmas. Now, the next one I want to talk about, in my opinion, is the daddy of Christmas drinks, and that is mulled wine, or as I call it, mouldy old wine. That's what I call it, mouldy old wine. I don't know why. Do I think I'm funny? Not really, but that's what I call it anyway. Yeah, mulled wine. I love mulled wine. I absolutely love it. Pretty much it's hot red wine and spices. That's it. Now, it's also called Glühwein or Glögg in sort of Northern Europe, and it dates back to, are you ready? You think this is a Christmas drink? It dates back to the 2nd century BC. Yeah, before Christ was even kicking around, people were drinking mouldy old wine, mulled wine. Yeah. Now, there's a medieval recipe that I found, and it lists the following spices. Okay, there's a few, so hold on to your pants. Cinnamon, ginger, galangal, cloves, long pepper, nutmeg, marjoram, cardamom, and rosemary. Yeah. Now, it's popular in so many different countries around the world, and they tend to use different spices in different countries, depends on what spices are more available. And they've all got their different names in their different languages, but what's interesting is that nearly all of them translate to either hot, warmed or heated, or burnt wine. That's what the names mean. Hot wine, burnt wine, as you translate them. Apart from in the UK. And in the UK, the word mulled or mull means to warm and add spices and sweetness. Now, it's possibly that that word comes from a type of beer, which is mull, M-O-L. But I don't know. But I find that interesting that like the word mulled literally means that. The etymology of it is like, did someone say like, what are you doing with that wine? Oh, I'm just mulling it over, mate. Mulled wine. I don't know. But that's, yeah, if you look it up, if you look at the word mould in the dictionary, that's what it means. So there you go, yeah. The origins of it, like I said, it goes back to the 2nd century BC. What would happen is, right, they'd make up all this wine, okay, because they'd crush the grapes, got the juice, ferment it. You'd have a load of naff wine left over. You had the good stuff and you had the naff stuff. Now, to make it more palatable, what they would do would they would add spices and some sort of sweet to taste. Now, the Romans followed on from that and they called it Conditum paradoxum, which means seasonal paradox. I don't know why it was called that. I do not understand. But then it really took off in medieval times, with loads of different variations, and there are also still loads of different variations around the world, and I'm going to read out a few to you. So you've got Latvian style, and they had black balsam, which is a black liqueur from Riga, which is in Latvia. You've got the Hungarian style, which uses a local wine called Egri Begava, which is a red wine, and they had cinnamon and cloves. Bulgarian style, they had honey, apples and citrus fruit. Moldovan, they had pepper and honey. Yeah. Swedish style, and generally Scandinavian, the main ingredients are red wine, sugar, cinnamon, cardamom, ginger and cloves, but sometimes they'll add a shot of vodka, aquavit or brandy. Alsatian style, Alsace is an area in France, they tend to use white wine using Riesling or Pinot Blanc. Yeah, interesting, isn't it? I've never considered that. I don't know what I think of it because I've never tried it. Polish style is made from hot beer accompanied by the rest of the traditional ingredients of mulled wine, the fruit and the spices. And you've got Turkish style, and they drink it with sugar, oranges and lemon. So there you go. Now that's a very shallow dive into mulled wine, but I'm going to provide you with a recipe now for making your own mulled wine. Are you ready? You might want to get a pen and paper for this. Okay, so first thing you need is to go to Tesco's and buy a bottle of mulled wine. There you go. That's the recipe. Hope you liked it. You're looking at about £3.50. It's not very strong. I'll tell you something. It's gone down in strength. I swear it was about 8% a couple of years ago. Now it's down to 5%. How am I going to get drunk on that? It's about the same as beer. Yeah, so that's where I get my mulled wine. I buy it from Tesco's. Quite often, I'll go back in January and stock up because they've reduced the price and I'll just keep it for a year. Although I did that this year, they hadn't reduced the price and they've still got it there today. They've still got mulled wine. They're serving mulled wine. This time, who's drinking mulled wine in June? Not even me. And I blooming love mulled wine. Tell you what, could you drink it cold? I should try that. Maybe I'll go and buy a bottle, £3.50. Get myself a bottle of mouldy old wine. Chuck in some ice cubes. See what I think of it. Don't know if I'd like it. Yeah. That's where I get my mulled wine, though. I've tried other types. Sainsbury's, Asda. You'd call that Walmart, I think. Lidl, do they do one? No, Lidl did a strange one. I said, who cares anyway? Tell you another thing about mulled wine. A few years ago, I was in a garden centre. Now, garden centres in the UK, you've got like your nurseries where they just sell plants and stuff like that. Some of the garden centres, they're more like a massive gift shop with plants and outdoor stuff, but also all sorts of crud. Like you can buy clothes in there, like hats and scarves and loads of Christmas decorations at Christmas, and quite often have like a massive Christmas. Anyway, don't want to go into that. What I want to go into is what I saw there. They had a tin of mulled wine sweets. Yeah, so I bought some. I've still got them, but I bought them like 3 or 4 years ago. I bought them before I started doing the podcast. I've still got them. And the deal was, I thought, well, I could use them for the podcast. So I put one in my mouth when I'm doing the podcast, make me feel all festive because mulled wine always makes me feel Christmassy. But problem was, it's hard to talk when you've got a boiled sweet in your mouth. So I stopped doing that. And then what I did a few times was like I'd break one in half, eat that quickly to try and get myself in the Christmas spirit before recording. Yeah, there we go. That's a shallow dive into mulled wine. So the next one I want to talk about is mulled cider. Pretty much the same as mulled wine, really. Now, the next one I want to talk about is julmust. Now, julmust is a Swedish drink. Right? It's a soft drink. I know, I'm sorry, don't be bored. Don't switch off just because I'm talking about a soft drink. But it's very interesting because I don't believe we talked about this when I interviewed my Swedish friend for the podcast, but I have spoken to him about it in the past. Now, julmust, it comes from the word jul, which is Christmas in Scandinavian, and must, which means a not yet fermented juice drink. And in Sweden, at Christmas, they sell 45 million litres of the stuff, and 50% of the December soft drink market is made up of julmust. Yeah, it was invented in 1910 by a Swedish chemist called Harry Roberts as an alternative to beer, like a non-alcoholic alternative, and it became really popular, and Harry Roberts' company, Roberts AB, are the sole producers of the syrup. So if you want to make your own julmust, all the companies that sell it have to buy the syrup from Robert's AB, and then they add the water and maybe other flavourings that they want to add, because there's lots of different types of Yulemust you can buy. And the taste is a cross between something between Coca-Cola and root beer. And outside of Christmas, it's very hard to find, apart from at Easter, when you can buy Paskmust, which means Easter must. Now, I've never tried it, but apparently you can buy it in IKEA. So maybe this Christmas, I'll get myself down to IKEA, see if I can't get hold of a bottle of the stuff. Now, I want to tell you an interesting story about this Yulemust, because, so if you remember earlier, Bob Baker was talking about the Coca-Cola truck, the old holidays are coming, and Coca-Cola sales really do go up at Christmas, apart from in Sweden, where their sales drop by around 50%. So Coca-Cola were like, well, we need to sort this out. So they went to Roberts AB, the sole producer of the syrup, the original creators, and they tried to buy the rights. They tried to buy the recipe, because the syrup recipe is like a closely guarded secret, kind of like the Coca-Cola recipe. Well, Roberts AB weren't going to sell to them, so Coca-Cola decided to make their own brand of Yulemust. And they bought it out in 2004, and they called it Bjar Yulemust, which translates to Bear Yulemust. And here's the thing, to make it, they had to buy the syrup from Roberts AB. So they were buying the syrup from Roberts AB, making their own brand. It was not particularly popular. Like I said, it came out in 2004. By 2007, the only place you could get hold of it was in McDonald's, because Coca-Cola and McDonald's, they sort of share a contract. And then it was completely gone by 2008, only to return again in 2011. Now, I had a bit of a look, but I can't see if it's still around now. So that's like 12 years ago. So yeah, I don't know if you can still buy the Coca-Cola version of Yulemust, but you did used to be able to, because they were trying to get into the market there. Yeah, so that's Yulemust. And that brings us to the end of this segment. Now, I am sure you're sitting at home going, oh, how could you miss out this? Or how could you miss out that? Quite easy, really. I didn't know about them, or I didn't think about them. That's how I managed to miss them out. If you want to send me in your drinks, I'll be happy to read them out, and I'll be happy to do a little bit of research as well and tell people about the Christmas drinks that they could be missing out on and they could be enjoying. So yeah, please do send in your Christmas drink suggestions. But don't send in some cocktail that you've invented. There were pages and pages of different Christmas cocktails. I'm not that interested in those, because, you know, anyone could invent one of those, and I could be here for months just covering Christmas cocktails. So I'm not going to do that. But if you've got a traditional one that you think I should share, let me know and we'll chat about it. Now it's time for this. Boys and girls, this episode's recommendation was sent in by our Scandinavian American correspondent Benji Pearson. That's the second time he's put something in for this show. Now, here's the thing. If you listen to Robin and Juno's podcast, my daughters, if you listen to their podcast, you'd already be aware of this, because Benji's son Joseph had to make a podcast for a project at school, and he asked Robin and Juno for some ideas on how to do a great job, and they gave him some fantastic advice, I'm sure. And Joseph went on and made his own podcast for this project, and I've had a listen to it. It's really good and it's really interesting. What bothered me slightly about it is it does sound a lot better than my podcast. That was a bit of a concern. And the way they talk, their eloquence and their vocabulary just makes me look like some, well, dumb bloke, I suppose. Now, the project was called Child Labour, a sort of tongue-in-cheek reference to the fact that the teacher was getting the kids to do this work. And the podcasts are a high school analysis of American concept albums. So each different episode by the different students covers a different album. And the one that Benji's son Joseph covered was Dolly Parton's 9 to 5. Now, I was familiar that Dolly Parton had a single, 9 to 5, and a film. I didn't know she had an album, to my shame, but she did. And Joseph and his friends talk about it, and it's fantastic. It's really interesting. It's something I never knew about. Really well recorded. and edited. And yeah, I learned a lot from it, a lot that I did not know about this album by Dolly Parton. It's not something I would have gone out and searched for either, so it was quite a treat. So if you want to have a listen to it, that's my recommendation. I'll put a link in the show notes. I don't know if it will come up if you Google it, Child Labour High School Analyses of American Concept Albums. I don't know about that, but it's on Spotify. I'll put the link in the show notes, and I'll probably chuck something up on Facebook so you can have a listen. And I'm sure Joseph would be really grateful if you did. And if you like it, why not email me and tell me that you enjoyed it? And one thing I can say, hand on heart, is that this is by far the best episode of all the ones done by Joseph and his classmates. And I can say that for definite because I haven't listened to the other ones. I probably should, actually. I probably find it quite interesting. But this is definitely the best. So I thought, well, I've listened to the best. Why would I want to listen to the other ones now? So yeah, check it out. Like I said, it's an analysis of Dolly Parton's concept album 9 to 5 by Joseph Pearson and his school colleagues. And that is it for this episode. I want to say a huge thank you to Benji for sending in his stuff, for Scott for recording the story about St. Nicholas, for Bob Baker for both of his segments, and I want to say a thank you to you and your beautiful ears for listening to my show. I hope you've enjoyed it. If you want to get in touch, you know what to do. You can write a letter, seal it up, and then throw it in the sea, and it'll turn up. It'll probably turn up before you could email me, actually, if the story of St. Nicholas is anything to go by. Yeah, there are other methods. You can email me at totalchristmas@gmail.com or check out the website, which I haven't updated in nearly 3 years, and that is totalchristmaspodcast.com. I'll be back again in 2 weeks' time. In the meantime, I love ya! You know I love ya! Merry Happy Christmas!
There's a child without a present.
Arthur, Christmas is not a time for emotion.